At the time of the death of Louis XI in 1483, France was the leading power in Christendom, set to take the rest of Europe by storm. The power of the Valois monarchy was at its zenith. The Valois enjoyed a special status over the Gallican Church not afforded to other Catholic monarchs. Meanwhile, they possessed one of the most formidable standing armies on the continent. The King of England, having relegated from titular King of France, Duke of Normandy and Aquitaine, to the Lord of Calais. To the east, the borders of the Holy Roman Empire were vulnerable, while to the south, Italy was ripe for conquest. Yet, France's apparent strength proved to be its greatest weakness. In seizing the French domains of the Duke of Burgundy, Louis had inadvertently delivered the Low Countries to the Habsburgs. The premature death of Louis XI precipitated a noble rebellion and a foreign intervention known as the Mad War. The now Habsburg House of Burgundy played on the fears of the Spanish monarchs, Ferdinand and Isabella, to form a dynastic pact to check French expansion. Several French expeditions into Italy had the ultimate effect of cementing Spanish power in the peninsula at French expense. After over half a century of conflict in the Italian Wars, the French had gained a few measly possessions in Lorraine, while the Spanish crown was both the dominant European power and the first global power, possessing an overseas empire that stretched from Peru to the Philippines. The loss of international prestige, France's claim as Europe's premier nation, was compounded by the arrival of the Reformation in France and the premature death of the last strong Valois king, Henry II. France entered a period of weak kings under the influence of the soon-to-be vilified Catherine de' Medici. The Valois, rather than championing either the Catholic or Protestant Huguenot causes, pursued a third position that satisfied neither camp, reliant on an appeal to absolutism, while the power of the monarchy evaporated. The inability of the sons of Henry II to produce an heir ensured that the religious conflict coalesced into a dynastic struggle between the houses of Navarre and Guise. As order in France dissolved, the Valois resorted to increasingly desperate gambits, such as the orchestration of the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre against the Huguenots and the murder of the head of the Catholic League, Henry of Guise, to retain power. The assassination of the last Valois king, Henry III, left France in an unprecedented situation of having a Protestant, Henry of Navarre, as king by right of Salic law. Henry of Navarre, now Henry IV, was compelled to convert to Catholicism to end the anarchy in France, while conceding rights to his old Huguenot supporters through the Edict of Nantes. The senior branch of the House of Valois had expired with Charles VIII, and the Orléans branch with Louis XII in 1515, ensuring the elevation of Louis's distant cousin and descendant of Charles V, Francis of Angoulême. Louis XII's war in Italy, while initially successful, led France to become the target of Julius II's secular crusade in the War of the League of Cambrai. At the time of Francis's ascension, France was an enemy of the Pope, and the Italian War appeared lost. And yet Francis was able to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat with his decisive victory at Malinano. With his victory came possession over the Duchy of Milan, and perhaps more significantly, papal confirmation of royal privileges over the Gallican Church. The Catholic Church in France, including the right of the king to appoint benefices, i.e., bishops, although the Pope still had the right to veto, restricting clerical appeals to Rome, and of course, the king had the right to levy tithes on church property. It is at this time that the Italian Renaissance came to France through Francis's patronage of humanism and his endowments to the University of Paris. While at the signing of the Concordat of Bologna, Francis had invited Leonardo da Vinci to Chateau Amboise, his royal residence on the Loire. Prominent Catholic humanists in France, such as Lefebvre d'Etaples, a favourite of Francis, influenced the methodology of Luther, while his circle, which included Marguerite, Francis's sister and Queen of Navarre, author of the anti-clerical Heptameron, and William Farel, a later ally of John Calvin, anticipated the emergence of the Reformation movement in France. Francis's triumph and confirmation of the supremacy of the French monarchy was short-lived, however. In 1516, Charles of Ghent, Lord of Burgundy, reached his majority and succeeded to the thrones of Spain, a development that wasn't frustrated by Francis, owing to the diplomatic détente fostered by Charles's favourite, Duquoy. 3 years later, Charles was elected over Francis as King of the Romans and later crowned as Holy Roman Emperor, ensuring the creation of a behemoth dynastic empire that dwarfed France. Amidst the rise of Charles V, Luther's Protestant Revolution in Germany appeared initially as a boon to the French, pitting the powerful German princelings of Saxony and Hesse in religious opposition to their emperor and his regent Ferdinand of Austria. However, the Reformation would not remain a strictly German phenomenon for long. Already by 1520, Froben's printed collection of the works of Luther were being sold in Paris. The circulation and discussion of said works progressed unimpeded. Having been partially responsible for patronizing the acolytes of the Proto-Reformation in France and observing the tumultuous situation in Germany, Francis began to repress explicit Lutheran heretics in France. Francis's posture on Catholicism must be placed in the context of political expediency. After his capture, the French disaster at the Battle of Bavia, it suited Francis to cast himself in the role of the defender of the papacy and Catholics in various institutions and diplomatic contrivances, such as the League of Cognac, and of course, after the sack of Rome, by the troops nominally loyal to the emperor and his rival Charles V. By 1530, the Swiss Reformation under Zwingli was well underway, and his supporters began to be targeted by the Catholic authorities in France. Nicolas Cop, a religious reformer and rector of the University of Paris, was forced to flee France to Switzerland, while his friend John Calvin, a native of Picardy and graduate in law from the University of Orléans, was forced to join Cop in Switzerland after the affair of the placards. The affair, which saw texts influenced by Zwingli's attitude on the Mass, authored possibly by William Farel or Anton de Marcourt, appeared in public spaces in Paris, Rouen and Orléans. A placard was even placed on the door to King Francis's bedchamber. Prior to the 1534, the Gallican Church and the Paris Parlement had dragged a reluctant Francis into an anti-Reformation posture. After the affair of the placards, Francis, feeling that the Protestants now threatened his personal security, sided explicitly with the Catholics and the printing of Protestant publications. In the context of Francis' war with Charles V, Francis was prepared to do the unthinkable and ally with the Muslim Ottoman Sultan Suleiman. The affair of the placards provided a useful pretext for Francis to adopt a version of hardline Catholicism at a time when such an alliance with a Muslim power against Christians invited criticism of heresy and apostasy. To this end, Ottoman ambassadors negotiating the alliance were invited to witness the execution of heretics in the aftermath of the affair. In his exile in Basel, John Calvin published the Institutes of the Christian Religion in 1536. That same year, William Farel invited him to Geneva, only for the city to expel both men, whereafter Calvin led a group of French Protestants in Strasbourg. Calvin was then invited back to Geneva in 1541, where he instituted the Ecclesiastical Ordinances, the constitution of the Genevan church government. With his power base secured, Calvin ruthlessly crushed opponents to his teachings, such as Michel Servetus, while reform sympathizers flocked to Geneva. His authority in Geneva supreme, Calvinism, as distinct from Lutheranism, was established. Moreover, Calvin never forgot France. Rather, France was at the forefront of his plans for the extension of the Reformation, advising French Protestants on political and ecclesiastical organization, while sending dozens of Reformed missionaries to preach. Lutheranism held sway over a significant number of French merchants and artists, while Calvinism received noble and even royal patronage. Louis de Bourbon, Prince of Condé, and later a prominent early leader of the Huguenots, converted to Calvinism while passing through Geneva, returning home to France from a military campaign in Italy. The persecution of Protestants under Francis culminated with the massacre of Merindol in Provence under the authority of the Parlement of Provence. The Paris Parlement, originally conceived as an evolution from Saint-Louis' Council de Roi, was France's highest court and held universal jurisdiction over the kingdom during the reign of Philip IV. In the final years of the Hundred Years' War, Charles VII had revived the Parlement of Toulouse, leading to the creation of Parlement across the French periphery, often in territories recently acquired, such as Provence, Normandy, and Burgundy, while the Paris Parlement held sway over the interior. Brittany had been in dynastic union with France since the reign of Queen Anne and Charles VIII, and under the reign of Henry II, was received into the French kingdom with its own parlement at Rouen. France, therefore, had competing legal jurisdictions, the parlement, a vehicle for local aristocracy to promote regional governance and law. The massacre of Merindol resulted in the destruction of up to 28 villages and the deaths of tens of thousands of people, perpetrated by veterans of the Italian wars and troops supplied from the Papal Avignon enclave. The Parlement was responding to the old Valdensians and Arelat heresy dating back to the 12th century, after they had become aligned with Lutherans, though the king would take 4 years to sanction the decision. Francis died in 1547 and was succeeded to the throne by his son Henry II, who intensified the persecutions of heretics begun in the late reign of Francis, issuing the Edict of Chateaubriand, curtailing the Protestants' ability to worship, assemble, and preach, a response to the increasingly bold conversion efforts sponsored by Calvin in Geneva. While many French Protestants were now forced to practice their religion in secret, the ultimate number of believers continued to grow apace. Of concern to the monarchy, perhaps more than half of the nobility had converted to Calvinism by the year 1559, echoing the trend seen with the conversion of princelings in northern Germany. With both Henry II and Francis had tried to exploit during their conflict with Charles V. Compare this with the trend of the general population, of which Calvinists consisted of only around 10% of the population by 1572. The Lutheran centres of power, however, were regionally confined to the Holy Roman Empire, while French Calvinists held sway over the Dauphin, Northern Provence, near Geneva, of course, and the area corresponding to the jurisdiction of the Parlement of Toulouse, the site, of course, coincidentally, of the 13th century Cathar heresy. Regarding the etymology of the word Huguenot, which I will use from now on to refer to French Calvinists, their name derives from a pejorative pun based on the Catholic Swiss confederate Bessin Hugh, which in Dutch, Huisgenoten, Calvinism arrived in the Netherlands in the 1540s, means housemate, a literal connotation giving that Huguenots would often meet and worship in shared private spaces, a word with similar connotations to the Swiss confederate or Eidgenosse, oath fellow. The so-called Eidgenossen were associated with Geneva, rendered in French, of course, the language of Geneva, as Huguenot. It must be noted that there has been an attempt to rescue the origin of this term from its German-Dutch roots to instead refer to Huguenot, i.e. little follower of Hugh Capet, emphasising the domestic affiliation, hearkening back to the nobility of France's dynastic founder, rather than some invasive Swiss phenomenon. Henry II's short reign had been a boon to France. Even though the Edict of Chateaubriand had failed to limit the growth of the Huguenots, Henry had acted decisively to compensate for Francis's ultimate defeat in the Italian Wars. Henry II had contributed to the semi-forced abdication of Charles V and the partitioning of the Habsburg patrimony, though for a more in-depth analysis, I would recommend you familiarise yourselves with the previous lecture. He had taken possession of the three bishoprics in Lorraine, and commenced France's advance to the Rhine while taking Calais, the last continental possession of the English. To celebrate the end of hostilities with the Empire and Spain, the Treaty of Cateau-Cambresis, Henry II hosted and took part in a jousting tournament where he met his untimely demise. The accidental death of Henry II in 1559 led to a power vacuum under his son Francis II, ascending to the throne at the tender age of 15. The House of Guise, a relatively new house in the scheme of France's ancient aristocracy, a cadet branch of the House of Lorraine, and yet it quickly emerged as one of the most powerful families in France. Francis, Duke of Guise, was a military hero, the conqueror of Calais. Queen Mary, consort to Francis and Queen of Scots, was the daughter of Mary of Guise, regent of Scotland and sister to Francis. The great constable of France, de Montmorency, a favourite of Henry II, was quickly eclipsed by Francis de Guise and Charles of Lorraine, a cardinal. With the Guise family now in ascendancy, they instituted laws against the Huguenots, enabling raids against landlords suspected of harbouring heretics, and executed prominent Huguenot Anne de Bourg, providing a martyr for the Huguenot cause. With the recent peace in the kingdom, the Guises found it necessary to cut the wartime levels of expenditure, alienating many troops whose payment had been deferred under Henry II. The Catholic Guises were now confronted with a disgruntled and idle army, with a vast number of Huguenot noble officers, the so-called petit seigneurs, or little lords. These nobles coalesced around Antony, King of Navarre, who had a claim on the French throne as a prince of the blood, Prince du Sang, by Salic law, and was head of the senior branch of Bourbons. They then advocated for an extraordinary solution to the Guise problem, a regency of Francis II under Antony, believed to be a Huguenot, despite the fact that the king had reached his majority, was married, and his mother, Catherine de Medici, was still alive. From the Huguenot dissatisfaction with the Guises and their inability to win over Antony, this faction turned to the avowedly Huguenot Louis Prince de Condé, of even more dubious right to the regency, with plans to summon the Estates General of France to deal with various noble grievances. The plot, organised by one Le Renardi, attempted to stage a coup by capturing Francis II at the royal residence of Amboise. Their plan was discovered before they could succeed, and the government executed hundreds of suspected plotters. However, the plot convinced the Guises to offer concessions to the Protestants, who offered amnesty to those who were loyal to the king, so long as they recanted their heresy. A revolution in Lyon, attempting to transform the city into a second Geneva, was crushed and led to the pursuit of the evasive Prince de Condé, who was captured with the aid of fellow Catholic monarch Philip II of Spain. De Condé would have been executed were it not for the sudden and unexpected death of King Francis II. The Guise family could no longer act through Mary Queen of Scots, who would soon return home to Scotland, and so fell from power, while Catherine de Medici assumed the regency for her 10-year-old son, Charles IX. Catherine, now regent of France, was an unapologetic defender of the rights of her son and her adoptive dynasty, the House of Valois, intent to shore up the monarchy's independence from any one faction that could eclipse it. To this end, she was prepared for détente with the religiously vacillating House of Bourbon to counter the Catholic House of Guise. The cost of this policy was that she arranged to free de Condé, in order that Antony renounced his rights as regent in the hope of forestalling a similar conspiracy of Amboise. Although privately a committed Catholic, she favoured a policy of civic order. Despite this, the fallout from the death of de Bourg and the Amboise conspiracy continued with the first instances of Protestant iconoclasm in France, the destruction of images and statues in Catholic churches occurred in Rouen, Normandy and La Rochelle in 1560. In 1561, mobs carried out acts of iconoclasm in more than 20 cities and towns, which were met by Catholic reprisals against Protestants in Sens, Cahors, and Carcassonne, Tours, and other cities. Catherine de Medici opted to resolve the situation with religious dialogue. At the colloquy of Poissy, the Huguenot Bez and the Cardinal of Lorraine appeared ready to compromise on the form of worship. Antony and de Condé petitioned Catherine for the free exercise of religion. With the Edict of July, Catholicism was recognised as the state religion, but with a vague intimation of the preservation of France's subjects from religious injustice. Rather than provide a basis of religious reconciliation, as Catherine would have wished, the Protestant and Catholic positions appeared intractable. In the face of further provincial violence, the July Edict was followed up by the January Edict, reversing some of the provisions of Chateaubriand, permitting limited form of worship outside city-town limits. The Duke of Guise opposed such measures, and conscious of potential reprisals by his rival de Condé, should he need to use force, Guise preemptively secured the neutrality of de Condé's would-be Protestant allies in Germany, while winning Antony of Navarre over to the Catholic side. On his way to his family seat at Joinville, he was enraged to hear that Huguenots were out in force to worship in nearby Versailles, according to the provisions of the edict, which had yet to be ratified by the Paris Parliament, and from the conception of the Duke of Guise were therefore illegal. Confronted with Huguenot worshippers in the centre of his patrimony and near his own castle, Francis convened Catholic supporters to drive the worshippers away, which led to the dispatch of some 50 of an assembled crowd of 500. The event, later dubbed the Massacre of Versailles, was the necessary pretext for war between Catholics and Huguenots. Already prepared for the outbreak of hostilities, the Huguenots, led by de Condé, established a protectorate over the Protestant churches in France, and moved to establish a power base in Orléans with the intent, as with so many aristocratic rebellions in the medieval and early modern periods, to rescue the king from the ensnare of his wicked counsellors. From Orléans, Huguenot military garrisons established control over key cities along the Loire, while a second rising in Lyon succeeded in briefly modelling itself on church rule in Geneva. A similar attempt at a Huguenot coup was met with the Catholic mob in Toulouse, who then carried out reprisals in the city. Catherine's policy had failed, and so she reluctantly lent on the House of Guise for support, who compelled her to revoke the edicts of July and January. The war went well for the Catholics. They secured Protestant Rouen, though at the cost of Antony of Navarre, while de Condé was captured at Tours. At the siege of the Huguenot stronghold at Orléans, Francis of Guise, captaining the Catholic army, was assassinated by de Maire, implicating the Huguenot leader Coligny and de Bez, the basis of a bitter rivalry between the new Duke of Guise, Henry, and Coligny. With the Catholic potentate dead and Orléans defenders unrelenting in their defence of the city, Catherine resorted to an uneasy peace. Catherine again attempted to reconcile the factions under her son, Charles, accompanying him on a royal tour around the provinces to bolster the monarchy's prestige. A surge in iconoclasm along the border with the Spanish Netherlands and a fear of a joint Catholic reprisal led by Kings Charles and Philip of Spain led to an attempt by the Huguenots to capture the king at the surprise of Meaux, eerily similar to the conspiracy of Amboise. The failure of that plot led to a revolution in La Rochelle and Nîmes. In the case of Nîmes, the coup resulted in the Michelade, the massacre of 18 Catholic clergymen. Despite a royal victory at Saint-Denis, the death of Constable Montmorency convinced Catherine to sue for another peace with concessions granted to the Huguenots. Catholic patience snapped. Catholic confraternities sprang up across the country in defiance of the conditions of this peace. De Condé and Coligny fled court, while Charles conceded the Edict of Saint-Mont, revoking the freedoms of Huguenots to worship. In the Third War, we see active foreign participation in the ongoing French civil conflict, something Francis of Guise had managed to prevent. German prince sent troops to assist de Condé. William the Silent led an abortive invasion of France, while the Huguenot cause received funding from Elizabeth of England, who was dealing concurrently with the aristocratic Catholic revolt, the Rising of the North. From their base in La Rochelle, the Protestants expanded into Poitou. At Jarnac, de Condé was killed, and Coligny took command of the Huguenot forces in the name of the two adolescent Henrys of Bourbon, Navarre and Condé. Henry of Navarre was the son of Antony and Jeanne d'Arbouet. In contrast to her vacillating husband, Jeanne became a Huguenot partisan and committed Calvinist after 1560, influencing the religion of her son and later Henry IV of France. During the Third War, she had fled to La Rochelle and became the city's leader during the siege. Consequently, La Rochelle held out against the royal army. Coligny, however, defeated in battle, led a hit-and-run campaign to Toulouse and then up the Loire, compelling Charles IX to sue for peace again. After a year of peace, Coligny returned to favour in the court and attempted to direct French foreign policy against the Catholic Spanish, to aid the Dutch revolt, and openly ally with the English who had funded his rebellion. The Guises, meanwhile, were out of favour, with many of their supporters refusing to accept the peace. In the spirit of détente, Catherine de' Medici alienated Catholics even further by sponsoring a royal marriage between her daughter Margaret and the Calvinist Henry of Navarre, a policy opposed by the Spanish, the Pope, and the Paris Parlement. Cardinal de Bourbon, the Catholic uncle of Henry, was reluctantly persuaded to marry the couple. The arrival of Protestant nobles in Catholic Paris to celebrate the marriage exacerbated existing tensions among the populace. The catalyst for what history would remember as St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre in 1572 was an attempted assassination of Coligny while a Huguenot army of some 4,000 men was stationed outside the city. Fearing Huguenot reprisals, in all probability, as no details of their meeting survive, Catherine convinced her son Charles IX to commit to an about policy turn. The targeted assassination of a few dozen of the most prominent Huguenot leaders in Paris convened for the wedding, a task handed to the king's Swiss guard. However, the gates were shut and the citizens of Paris were armed, ostensibly to forestall a potential coup should the assassination event fail. In the event, what was intended as a purge of the Protestant leaders became a violent pogrom against all Protestants in the city, amounting to tens of thousands of deaths across several days, the culmination of over a decade of increasing mob violence, aristocratic assassinations, and the resulting paranoia of both factions. Catherine's radical shift was an admittance of the failure of her policy of reconciliation in the face of what could have amounted to another conspiracy of Amboise or surprise of Meaux, if not on an even grander scale. Henry de Condé and Navarre remained in Paris, where they had publicly abjured their Calvinism and become effective hostages of the court. The official narrative presented by the French to foreign embassies was that of a preemptive strike against a Huguenot coup, while Protestant powers such as England were eventually assuaged that the massacre had no bearing on anything other than civil order in France and was not indicative of broader hostilities against France's Protestant neighbours, though the vast majority of Protestants abroad interpreted it as such with horror. Meanwhile, Huguenot opposition to the crown was seriously weakened by the deaths of their many leaders. Many Huguenots emigrated to Protestant countries, others converted to Catholicism, and the remainder concentrated in the small number of armed cities, Place de Sûreté, safe havens, where they formed a majority. The offensive against the Huguenots was taken to Sommières and La Rochelle, resulting in the formal curtailment of the rights afforded to them in the previous peace. While Huguenots were given amnesty, worship was to be confined to the Place de Sûreté, La Rochelle, Montauban, and Nîmes, while the Huguenot petits seigneurs were permitted Protestant marriage and baptism. The health of Charles IX was now failing. His brother, the Duke of Anjou, had been elected King of Poland, while the Duke of Alençon, a Catholic, was seen by the Huguenots as their champion. The death of Charles IX caused the King of Poland, now Henry III of France, to quit his kingdom and confront a rebellion of his younger brother Alençon and his anti-absolutist faction, derisively referred to as the Malcontents. Despite the Huguenot support of Alençon, Henry III cemented his alliance to the House of Guise through marriage. Henry of Conde had managed to escape and formed a power base in the Midi, while in 1576, Henry of Navarre also escaped Paris and reverted back to his old religion of Calvinism. To assuage his brother, who supported a Huguenot army besieging Paris, a reluctant Henry III conceded the Edict of Beaulieu, a treaty so favourable to the Calvinists that the Parlement throughout France protested. Unlike the Estates General, which was called at irregular intervals, the Parlement were meant to facilitate the codification and implementation of royal law throughout the kingdom. In the presence of a weak monarchy, such as that of the late Valois, the Parlement had attempted to acquire the power of a regular legislature, to which the king responded with the right of lit de justice, i.e. the compulsory registration of royal acts by the Parliament. As such, these organisations never evolved into standard legislatures as we would know them today, or even in England at that time. Henry, Duke of Guise, led the opposition to this edict with the creation of a Catholic League based on the Catholic confraternities that had been popping up over the last decade. The Estates General of Blois failed to resolve the impasse, and the Huguenots, yet again fearing reprisals, mobilised in Poitou. The Catholic League had the support of Philip II of Spain and the papacy, strong support in Paris, while the Guises and their allies controlled a significant portion of northeastern France. Henry III then rescinded most of the concessions that had been made to the Huguenots in his previous edict. The one guarantee in this period had seemed the continuity of the Valois line of Francis I. Henry II had four sons to succeed him, three of which had now sat on the throne of France, one also on the throne of Poland, and yet none of his sons had produced a healthy male heir. Alençon, having led the malcontents, now waged a personal war against the Spanish in the Netherlands, attempting to wrestle personal control of the country from the Spanish, while courting Elizabeth of England, who seriously considered him for marriage as part of this broader anti-Spanish strategy. As Alençon was favoured by the Huguenots and also happened to be a Catholic, his time as his brother's heir apparent secured for France an uneasy peace, a peace broken by his death in 1584. By Salic law, the Prince d'Usson, Henry of Navarre, a Huguenot, was now heir to France. When it became clear that neither he nor his cousin de Conde would abjure their Calvinism, Pope Sixtus V excommunicated them, and the Catholic League was revived under Henry of Guise with the financial and military support of Philip of Spain. The policy of Catherine de' Medici, who still exerted great influence over her son Henry III, had been to secure the Valois dynasty by preserving order in France and the monarchy's independence from the factions such as the House of Guise. The monarchist faction earned the epithet both derisive and complimentary of politique, for the faction was accused of religious indifference on the one hand and a defence of France's independence from Spain in particular on the other. The foundation to such an idea was a strong absolutist monarchy that could withstand the opposition of France's institutions, such as the Estates General, who overwhelmingly supported the harsh stance of the Catholic League. Moreover, while the League was avowedly Catholic and supported the prerogatives of the Pope, the Politique were concerned with retaining Gallican privileges afforded to Francis with the Concordat of Bologna. The king, as religious media and not papal conduit, was a key component to this politique conception of monarchy. It hadn't helped that the malcontents opposed this absolutist policy while Alençon was alive, and the death of Alençon was a death knell to that idea, at least to the House of Valois. For the wars of religion were now a war of succession between Henry of Navarre and Henry of Guise. For Henry of Guise, either as king or eminence gris under Henry of Navarre's uncle, Cardinal de Bourbon. The impotence of Henry III was realized when the League wouldn't vote him the funds in the Estates General to let the government wage war on the Huguenots, the League anticipating that Henry would betray the Catholic League and use their own resources against them. This distrust extended to the people of Paris, exemplified by the famous Day of the Barricades, a popular uprising on the streets of Paris to defend the Duke of Guise against the alleged hostility of the king. Henry III was forced to flee, while the Council of Paris allied with Guise to take power in the capital. Catherine de Medici interceded to acknowledge Cardinal de Bourbon as Henry's heir and Guise as commander of France's armies. Humiliated, Henry III decided to strike against Guise, summoning to his temporary seat at Blois, where he had his brother, Louis Cardinal of Guise, and the Duke himself assassinated, using his own bodyguards. Cardinal de Bourbon was then imprisoned at the castle of Chinon. The act so horrified the king's Catholic supporters that the League declared open war on him, while the Paris Parlement itself, an instrument of royal power in theory, condemned the king as a criminal. Surrounded in hostile territory, Henry III was forced to flee the protection of Henry of Navarre, and the Huguenots. The League began disseminating propaganda that the king, as perpetrator of such crimes against France, was an enemy of the nation, and as such, regicide was not just permissible, but actively encouraged. Henry III was therefore killed at his camp at Saint-Cloud while laying siege to Paris by one Friar Jacques Clément, so ending the Valois dynasty that had ruled France for over 250 years. Henry of Navarre was recognized by both the now deceased Henry III and Salic Law as Henry IV, King of France. Henry inherited only half a kingdom, his support coming from the southwest, while de Meun succeeded Guise as commander of France's armies of the kingdom and of the Catholic League, which held sway over the north and east. The basis for the League's opposition to Henry's claim came from their support of Cardinal de Bourbon, uncle of Henry IV, who was referred to as Charles X by the League. Henry IV attempted to acquire his throne by conquest, while the League was stoking fears in Paris of the horrors of a potential Protestant reign. Henry won a great victory at Ivry, and yet the Spanish intervention under the Duke of Parma prevented Henry from taking Paris and Rouen in Normandy. As the Spanish intervention in France escalated, so too did the English intervention to support Henry IV. A Catholic uprising in Brittany with Spanish support was quashed by the Anglo-French alliance. The League's attempts to exert itself against Henry were stifled by the lack of an anti-king. The would-be Charles X had been captured by Henry III and by 1590 had died in prison, leaving no Catholic Prince Toussaint to contest Henry IV's claim. The Parlement grappled with the idea of reverting to an elected kingship to ensure a Catholic succession. The candidates in such a case would be Charles, the new Duke of Guise, or de Meun himself, the head of the Catholic League. The Spanish, however, sponsored an Estates General to elect their own candidate, the Infanta Isabella, Philip II's daughter, who had a tenuous claim to the throne as the granddaughter of Catherine de Medici. But the Spanish had underestimated the French attachment to Salic Law and their opposition to a queen regent. With the excommunication of Henry IV making him unacceptable to most Catholics in France, France was at an impasse while the Catholic League was dividing. With his military success getting Henry IV nowhere closer to controlling the resolutely Catholic city of Paris, he agreed to abjure his Calvinism, quipping, "Paris vaut bien en messe," Paris is well worth the mass. He was received into the Catholic Church in 1593 and was crowned at Chartres in 1594 as the League controlled Reims and doubted the king's sincerity. When Henry was finally received into Paris, League members who did not submit were banished. The capitulation of Paris encouraged other towns to follow suit. The death of the hardline Sixtus V and the election of Pope Clement VIII paved the way for Henry's reconciliation on the condition that the Protestants were banned from serving in the highest offices of the realm. While no one could seriously contest Henry IV's authority as king, his hardline Huguenot allies felt betrayed by his conversion, while the Spanish aligned members of the Catholic League, some sincerely doubting Henry's conversion, others acting solely in the interest of the Spanish crown, would never accept his ascension. War against Spain would delight his Protestant allies at home and abroad, including Elizabeth I, while restoring royal authority after its near collapse over the preceding decade. The war was focused on evicting Spanish garrisons from northern French towns such as Amiens and preventing another defection from Brittany. At the close of the war with Spain, Henry turned to a lasting religious reconciliation. Henry IV's Edict of Nantes was his means of fostering unity and peace to France after nearly 40 years of conflict following the death of Henry II. In many ways, the Edict of Nantes, that granted limited tolerance to the Protestants in certain areas, recognised the Huguenot rights to maintain their place place de sûreté, resembled the July and January edicts that had preceded the outbreak of hostilities all the way back in 1562. The Huguenots had hoped for Catholic parity, which they did not receive. Huguenots were given the right to practice their belief and enter the lower echelons of government, augmenting the Place de Sûreté the king gifted and funded 150 Huguenot fortresses as Place de Refuge, and yet France was to remain a Catholic nation. Unlike Catherine de' Medici, the former Huguenot had succeeded in the aim of the politique and secured peace in France for the remaining decade of his reign. The House of Valois-Angoulême rose to restore the fortune of the beleaguered, war-torn France. This restoration was fleeting, and from the outset of the Reformation, the kings of France, beginning with Francis, adopted a political attitude to the issue of the religious unity of France, switching between compromise and repression, while the Valois were unable to prevent the rise of Spain as the first continental power. The monarchy failed to provide leadership to France's Catholics, the baton passing instead to the House of Guise, while also failing to placate France's Protestants. When compromise between these factions failed, the Valois resorted to increasingly desperate gambits to thwart them, whether it be the Bartholomew's Day massacre against the Huguenots or the assassination of the Catholic League's Henry of Guise. Such actions left the dynasty ultimately impotent and morally bankrupt before the assassination of Henry III. I ponder whether the tragedy that befell France in the later 16th century is in some way a fitting irony, given France's attempt to foster and exploit religious division in Germany and ally with the Ottoman Sultan Suleiman against Charles V's forces in Italy. Nevertheless, the 16th century, from a political standpoint, could be regarded as France's century of crisis, a lost century. A second Hundred Years' War, this time against the Spanish, whether directly or indirectly. The success of Henry IV is fittingly ripe with irony that the Huguenot, who replaced the Catholic Valois, should achieve their political aims as a Catholic convert, and whose successors would defend the Catholic faith with the fervour of the House of Guise, and would ultimately be responsible for the removing of the Huguenots from France. But that is for a different time. Thank you very much for listening to this lecture. I don't believe there have been any questions coming in, any super chats, so I will call this a day, if that is all right with everyone. Before I go, I want to thank all of my wonderful channel patrons, channel members, people over on Subscribestar who facilitate the work of this channel. It means so much. Other than that, if you enjoyed this content, please like the video. Please leave a comment to help with the algorithm. Otherwise, consider tuning in tomorrow for Monday's discussion on this topic, where we'll go over everything essentially in more depth and discuss a few articles with Marcus Furius Pertinax and Columba. Anyway, thank you again all so much for listening, and good night.